the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to a very special Wednesday episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. My name is Joey. Here is always my co-host Len. Sir, how you doing over there today? I noticed I didn't say anything about it on Monday's show, but you've added some new decorations there. They all look very good, I gotta say.
There they are. Yeah, I know they're trying to add to spruce it up a little bit. Absolutely. Yeah, everything is good here. How about you? Everything okay over there, Joey?
Fantastic, man. Fantastic. Very happy today to be joined by Frank Holmes, CEO and co-founder of Hive Blockchain. We're going to talk to him about a lot of stuff that you guys care a lot about, and I'm sure it'll be a great discussion. Before we start, though, Len is always sponsored by the mighty ShakePay, best way for Canadians to buy and sell Bitcoin, though you should never be selling. They got four things going on right now. Unbelievably four things. Thought there would only be three things at this point, but there's still four things. One, shaking sats. Use our promo code, Charlie Beta Peter. Sign up. Sign a friend up. Do whatever. Shake your phone every day. On day 365, they give you 1,000 sats. And as long as you keep remembering to wake and shake, you should be fine. 1,000 sats a day until something major happens in your life or you lose your phone or whatever. Or you're on Rogers one day and you don't have internet and can't shake. Then they got the sats back. You can spend off your CAD balance. First 5,000, 2% back. 1% after that. All paid out in Satoshi's. Outstanding. Then they got the Shake Paid, where if you spend off of your CAD balance on anything at all, you're entered into, I guess, a draw, a random pulling, a random whatever. Get your whole purchase comped in Satoshis. What did I miss there, Len? I feel like I'm missing one thing.
Shake Squad. Shake Squad.
The squad. That's right. The squads. You and four friends, or in the case of many people who watch this show, four people they've never met before and only know from the chat box on Monday nights. Get to be on a team. Every time someone on your team buys something, everyone on the team gets 42 sats accumulated daily, sent to your Bitcoin balance. Outstanding stuff. We love them. Hope you give them a shot. And if you haven't already, what the fuck are you waiting for, man? It's time to get going. Len, who's our other sponsor?
We also have Ledin. It's a good place to park your Bitcoin and earn some interest. So open up an account with our referral code below, dump 150,000 sats or 75 USDC on their platform for 15 consecutive days, and you'll be rewarded with 10 USDC. Also, if you have a large Bitcoin stack and you don't want to sell, you could simply borrow against it. Ledin is there to help you out. 50% loan to value, you're good to go. You can fill up your car, buy groceries or whatever in this very expensive time we live in. And if you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, I do, B2X, you're good to go. Once you think the price is good enough, don't be like Elon, pull out, and you're going to have more Bitcoin
out.
On your...
Always pull out, Len.
Always pull out, and then you'll have more Bitcoin on your balance sheet. And the last thing they do have is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages industry first. So check out their website for the jurisdictions where they offer the Bitcoin-backed mortgages, but also check their website for the interest rates and the borrowing rates. And yeah,
Ledin. The only thing, Len, that can make these times more expensive as a Bitcoin holder, because it's probably going to get less expensive for Bitcoin holders, but if you don't pull out, I guarantee things are going to get more expensive.
It's going to be very expensive.
Very expensive. Okay, let's bring on our guest. Frank is here. Frank, it's good to see you. Great hat, sir. I'm a little offended that you didn't offer us one. No one ever asked for my shipping address, my home address, my business address. But I think, you know what? We'll work on that some other time. It's good to see you. How are things over there at HQ?
Good, good. You're up there. Use some charm with Holly and Jamie. They'll send you a bunch of hats. And to your listeners that are interested, or shareholders of Hive, they can always call to get a Gucci B hat.
That'd be awesome to get. I would be wearing it proud on the show. I wear all the swag I get, as you can tell. I'm changing my wardrobe with one shirt and hat at a time.
Well, that's what you, Len, you said it was expensive times. I don't want to buy shirts. We started the show, at least in part, so that I could renew my wardrobe with free merch from guests, right? I'm pretty sure that was the idea.
Our hands are always wide open. Whoever wants to send something over, we have no problems taking it. As long as it's not offensive, we'll wear it on the show. No problem at all.
Anyway, Frank, tell us a little bit about yourself first. You're a guy who's been around. Hive has been around. We want to know what's your story, your background. Floor is all yours, my man.
Where are you based, Joey?
I'm in Hamilton. Len is in Oakville, both Southern Ontario, sir, which I think you may be familiar with, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I was at Mixmaster my first year. I was going into the journey of medicine, great medical school. But I'm originally from downtown Toronto, went to Jarvis Collegiate, the oldest high school in Canada, and went to McMaster my first year. And then I switched over to Huron University at Western. And that's where I graduated from before going into the investment world in 1978, before a lot of your listeners were born. So I'm known as the Colonel Sanders of crypto, someone told me the other day. But I went in. I was very fortunate. I learned everything about gold mining as an analyst. And then from there, I went to investment banking and was so lucky, again, to be able to have mentors like Seymour Schulich and Pierre Lassonde and Ned Goodman. And they were all with Beutel Goodman Money Managers. They left and they created Franco-Nevada, Seymour Schulich and Pierre Lassonde, which became the first gold royalty company in the world. Today, it was one of the ideas of a hive was what I love, was that their revenue per employee is something like today, $34 million per employee. And they have a gold royalty on the assets of Barrick in Nevada and Newmont. And there are $600,000 of revenue per employee. So I'll take the royalty company every day. And so Hive, when it first launched, it was the first crypto mining company to go public. Mm-hmm. And we started off with, I think, close to $36 million in revenue was the run rate of our first acquisition. And that's like that was about $10 million of revenue per employee. So that, if you take a look at the average financial institution, whatever, that is substantially greater. So I like that business.
Let me hit you with one follow-up here. In the Bitcoin space, especially on Twitter, I hear all the time people are camping on like really solid URLs, solid domain names, like, you know, 69420.com, things of this nature. You, sir, are camping on what I view as two of the best ticker symbols in the game. You got Jets, if I'm not mistaken, and you got Hive as well. So tell me a little bit about the Jets background, people who don't know, because this is an important thing that we'll touch on later, your sort of history with the ETF space. But what is Jets? How did that come to fruition for you?
As you know, also my holding company is public, and it's an investment advisor on NASDAQ, and its ticker is GROW, Grow. So
giving them all. Three for three, man.
if you think about it, I'm a big believer that you have to be thoughtful in the ticker to make it easy for people to remember. It's just like Coca-Cola was really well thought out, the name. And so that was the thought process when we launched Jets. And after I launched Jets, I went to launch a Bitcoin ETF, but realized it wasn't going to happen due to anti-money laundering concerns. And then in my journey of researching, and I'm an analyst, or a chief investment officer of U.S. Global Investors, I was really curious about the industry. And so there's some real important parts. There's an overlay to gold, and there's a similarity. But when you're a Bitcoin miner, you don't have an AML concern because you actually create the coin by validating. If you can get that your hockey stick on that puck fast enough every 10 minutes, you get a piece of the action. And so that thought process was really intriguing to me. That, and I said, well, if we hodl it, then we don't have to worry about buying from the capital markets, from an exchange or any problem. We are the creators. So that really inspired me to go and launch this. And usually I would launch a fund and I put $5 million in the fund. Now I put $5 million into launching Hive blockchain. And immediately another $25 million of other money came into it. And then we went public and $200 million came in. And I'm really happy that, you know, we've weathered the storm, the ups and the downs. Now we're another winter, but we're still doing, even with Bitcoin today and Ethereum, over $300,000 a day revenue. And we're making $150,000 a day. So it allows us to be able to maintain this sort of modest growth that we're enjoying. And we have all of our Bitcoin and we have still a lot of Ethereum in the bank account. So I think from that end, we've become all my gold followers. I mentioned earlier the Franco Nevada story, and a lot of followers of US Global, ticker GROW, GROW. They wanted to be able to participate, but they were reluctant, especially in 2017, to go to an exchange. And is it going to be another Mt. Gox and get hacked and lose their money? And there's all this negativity. So Hive became the proxy, and it became a way for people to participate in this build out of the ecosystem. I also loved it because it's a decentralized asset, like cash. It used to be, you know, cash still is, but not to the degree that it was after 9/11. It basically shrunk the amount of cash you can really carry it over state lines. But gold is still a decentralized asset, and that's what Bitcoin is. So I was very fascinated by that and the concept of blockchain, and that Bitcoin validated it, validated that if the credit default swaps had been put on the blockchain, they could have stopped the 2008 crisis. They didn't know what it was. They let Lehman go bankrupt because it was estimated to be hundreds of billions of dollars of credit, but it was only like $8 billion. But had it been on the blockchain, they could easily have seen that. So that whole concept, and the last thing I share with you that really inspired me was the CEO of Fidelity. You know, she's worth $30 billion. She's a CFA. She's a Harvard grad. She doesn't speak at investment conference, but she's at Consensus in 2017. And recently in Austin, I went to her small function. And once again, she's there in Austin with Consensus. So there's something big that's happening in this space. So even though we have these big meltdowns and winters, which mostly comes from the proof of stakers, if you go back to that, that, you know, they all the shit coins, they like to call them, that came out, and the tokens in 2017 and 18, and that meltdown wiped them out. And I was happy the SEC, Clayton was ahead of it, went after all these characters, and he's still, the SEC's hunting down the characters at Ripple. From day one, you know, Ripple hung us. We are a cryptocurrency and they're not. And so I think this, we've seen now we're weathering through this last winter storm of the POS people with their ways of leverage, and we can leverage our balance sheet, and we've created a long-term capital over in the metaverse. I call it the crypto metaverse. And it was all these crypto people making money on their money and making money on their money with monopoly money. And then when they tried to go and convert it to US dollars to pay their bills, that was one pretty risky thing. But then they started selling it to the retail. Hey, come over here. You know, I'm FDIC insured, et cetera. So they've created a huge mountain of difficulties as this sort of cascaded down. Hopefully in the next couple of months, it'll be that we've finally seen the worst behind us. But I think they created in their metaverse a long-term capital. And for your listeners, long-term capital was leveraged 100-1. So what does that mean? That means a 1% mistake and you wipe out the capital. 1%. So Celsius and all these other characters that are out there, they were so leveraged and offering. And I was told I was a fool of not taking our, at one time, almost $200 million of total coins in Bitcoin, Ethereum, and giving it to these guys. You know, I get the call all the time. You should be giving your Ethereum. You can earn a yield on it. And proof of stake is coming, and it'll destroy you. And I just said, no, we're going to play. If you can't give me what the counterparty risk is, we're not going to give you our coins. We're not pledging that. Mm-hmm. I'd rather just shrink my business model and not grow at this big rate than put all this risk. And I'm not going to borrow to buy more Bitcoin at 12%, 14% and have collateral risk. I'm too conservative. I've lived too many of these crises. So we've now still the most efficient miner. We are still, by you look at all the data points by Anthony Power, and it's playing a conservative role in an emergent industry.
So we've ripped into the altcoin market. I don't want to say shitcoin market.
That was an incredible start. Like it I really can't believe just absolutely tore the roof off the goddamn place there with the analysis of the shitcoin ecosystem.
No, I really am. Really, we are all just collateral damage, and more so Frank and his company, what's happened with Celsius and all these other shitty companies, because now we're experiencing the drawdown. And well, in terms of what's going to happen with ETH, we always hear that there's a transition of it moving to a proof of stake, and who knows if this is just simply vaporware. But I have read some interesting information from Hive saying you would pivot should they move to a proof of stake, and you would pivot to high performance computing. Can you talk a little bit more about this? What's the lead time towards this, and how lucrative is that in comparison to mining Ethereum?
There's two parts to that, and it's a great question. Because when I first launched Hive, I remember going to meetings and being bewildered by the questions. How can you be mining Ethereum in 2017? In the first quarter of 2018, they're going to proof of stake. And all the research was it was too complex. It was too problematic. It was utopia that they were looking for. And so we've seen this play out, and now they've been able to upload on some of these other platforms and say that they've been able to, this time last year, by the way, and part of those upgrades, that Ethereum was no longer going to be able to get fees and it was going to be destroyed. I was destroyed last year. That's not happened. So one of the, in the planning of that difficulty was to own our own data centers. And people told me I was nuts at the beginning of this, you know, and it was, if you really believe in the digitization of everything, from baseball cards to my building or whatever, you're going to need a lot of data centers. And if you're going to be coming up with something new and you need to have the backup, you're just going to have more data centers. Mm-hmm. So I said, how do I put that asset as a balance sheet on Hive rather than leasing everything and running these waves? What can I do to do it? So that was the first, we were told we're the only company that actually acquired other companies during COVID. We bought Lachute and bought all their S9s, got them all free. And we got all our money back many times from that. And so that was 30 megawatts. And today in that facility, it is heating a 200,000 square foot building. So think of it, a 40,000 square foot building, heating a 200,000 square foot building, recycling the energy. So I got 10,000 hair dryers, 1400 watts of machine blowing this hot air, and it doesn't just go off into the sky. It gets recycled. So there's so many things that you can do when you have a data center and you think this way. Our next big vision are greenhouses, especially up in northern Sweden, become the cucumber kings of the Nordic countries. So you don't have to ship from Italy and from Spain. You can have it right in your backyard or recycling that heat. So one of the thoughts is if you own your own data center, it makes it much easier. And when we first wanted to do that, it was costing about $350,000 a megawatt. Today, immediately after that, Riot bought for $2 million a megawatt. So that asset on the balance sheet is for real. And what we're building on the border of Maine in New Brunswick is a campus of beautiful cathedral-shaped buildings, and we can easily upgrade them. It handles 6 feet of snow. It handles whatever the weather is. So I believe that long-term, we're building something that's a real asset. Now, we fast-track the need for independent data centers, because if you want the high-performing artificial intelligence, smart cities, you want all this cancer research, I go on with a list of things that you need. You need these data centers, and Amazon data center, which is their biggest profit center, charges an arm and leg to get access to these GPU chips that we bought. And so does Microsoft, and so do other providers. So the data centers, which shocks me, you know, they trade at like they're trading at 15 times cash flow. That means that Hive should trade at much, much higher. And it's for people to realize, and I'm a big believer, the metaverse is going to happen. And some of the early guys in the metaverse were telling me that Amazon, et cetera, were shutting them down because they didn't understand the just bombardment, the needs for what they're using. Gamers. So some of the biggest growth of Ethereum miners in the world are hobby miners, over 30 million of them. I, as a kid growing up in Toronto, I had a paper route and I played Monopoly. These kids don't have a paper route. They're gamers. And if they're good with it, they get an upgrade and they get free Monopoly digital money now. And they get to, so then they go to bed, they turn their machines on, they mine one or two coins a year, gives them free technology. So I think that we're going to see more needs for these independent data centers that I'm building. And NVIDIA last year, when we bought $70 million of their best chips out there, the gamers need them. There were some, you know, complaints that why do we get them? Well, we could get our money back fast by mining Ethereum. And then all of a sudden, there's a secondary market. I can sell them all. Mm-hmm. It's liquid. And there's a need for these machines, and I depreciate them very quickly. In fact, I could sell them for a gain now because I depreciate them so quickly and I've got my money back. So that has been the sort of the long-term vision. If proof of stake did go through for Ethereum, and it was to hurt, that we can mine some other coins, but not on the scale that we do. And that these, and then we're building in downtown Montreal, HPC, and it's like a megawatt, and we're building up online. So it's going to be online, hopefully in the next 3 months, so that you'll be able to use for, if you're doing rendering, you're doing filming, you're doing something, you'll be able to use these data centers at half the one third the cost of going to Amazon.
Hmm. So predominantly,
that's an agile model. Very agile model.
So I just have a follow-up question. These data centers that you're building, that they're recently being built, especially in the East Coast of Canada, are these predominantly Ethereum miners, or are they a mixture between Bitcoin and Ethereum miners?
Good question. You know, it's in the in Canada, it's predominantly been Bitcoin mining, ASIC chips. And in Sweden, there's just benefits from, and we predominantly mine Ethereum. There's always sort of, in every country and every province and every state is a sort of an anti-groupie of towards the crypto industry. And in Ethereum has many, the GPU chip has many uses, so that it sort of stays out of being a crypto enemy of the state, where ASIC was deemed that way. So we said, okay, that's simple. And we originally started with mining Ethereum. That's what we'll do. And so we have two different types of data center usages that we use in Sweden. And we have great costs of electricity. Like you're talking 3 cents because we can hedge there.
Yeah, that's incredibly inexpensive. Frank, at the core of the question, I think is just really one thing that you haven't talked about, at least not, you know, specifically answered. Do you think proof of stake is coming to Ethereum, or is this just going to be pushed off forever and ever? Amen.
I think it gets pushed off at least until December or this time next year. You know, the hype is correlated with me having to give up my Ethereum to get a yield. So every quarter, it's coming now. You better give us your coins to earn an income. And it's just kind of been a disaster. I'm surprised that some of my peers haven't, you know, had, like, I don't know. I know a lot of them were lending their coins and making money. So it hasn't come out what the damage has been, if they've been able to get the Mr. Repo Man to get their coins back.
I understand your business model is you tend to sell your ETH, the ETH that you mined, but you want to maintain the reserve number of Bitcoin that you have on your balance sheet.
Yeah, it's gold.
So tell us why you came to this conclusion. I'm curious as to why you're selling ETH and hodling Bitcoin.
Because one thing is Ethereum is much more volatile, and I can apply a quant model to trade it. And if you know the gold market well, when gold has a run, silver takes off and outperforms. Gold has a correction, silver is a square root. I mean, you just get crushed. Right? It's just more volatile. Bitcoin takes off, Ethereum starts going, and all of a sudden Ethereum starts to surpass it. Bitcoin goes through a correction, Ethereum slowly comes down and then really starts to hit the floor. So it allows itself to be able to trade off of it. What we have done in our last recent press release, we've said that we are holding, are keeping all of our Bitcoin. And right now we've been selling everything we produce every day while we build out the 20 megawatts in New Brunswick. And so we want to make sure that we don't have to, no debt. I don't want the debt. I don't want to borrow against my Bitcoin. I don't want to go through, you know, I feel sad for Bitfarms, you know, because they paid a higher price. And I believe they leveraged some of their, I forget the group, but they leverage it and then they get tapped out. I think we have $60 million approximately of gold. I call it gold, but Bitcoin is my gold in the digital space. And I thought it was interesting at Consensus, the packed room was Snowden speaking. And he commented that gold is digital money. Bitcoin is digital gold. Bitcoin is digital gold.
So you touched on a word, debt, and that's seemed to be a very touchy word these days, given the downward trend of the price of Bitcoin, and it's impacting Bitcoin miners. as a result. Can you talk a little bit about Hive in your state in terms of the debt that Hive is holding? I've seen some charts that you've paid down some debt, at least the debt accumulation has gone down over time, but I haven't seen anything since March. I was wondering
The only thing that's material is that we have a mortgage at less than 5% with a bank in Quebec, you know, so that's a fixed rate. That's way below the CPI number. That's smart.
And this gives you lots of flexibility.
If you want to go and borrow against your ASIC chips, or you want to go borrow, it's been a while ago I looked at it. It was, it's only 9%. Okay, good. But there's an origination fee. And then there's this other fee. And then you start adding up all the fees. And you go, whoa, baby. Here, we're 14%. You know, like, this is not 9. It's not 8. You know, it's a much higher. And then if you fall below this level, you have to put up more Bitcoin or we sell you out. And so there was lots of talk about this inexpensive money. But I never found it. But I do think that what was really smart was what Marathon did. With the capital, where the convertible guys all short the stock, and they sold stock at them, I think it's $75 on a convertible equivalent. So I thought, and it's 1% cost of capital. So that was a really, you know, that was a smart move what they did in that end of it. But we've not been in that position because you have to be able to have a big short position on your stock in the U.S. if you're going to do a big convertible. Mm-hmm. We did do an ATM, an ATM, we only raised money in up days. So every time Bitcoin was up big, we sold a little bit, just 1%, 2%, tiny bit, and raised that capital. That allowed us to cover all our G&A and to keep holding Bitcoin.
So Frank, you mentioned that you guys are really concerned about sort of your balance sheet in a way that some of your competitors maybe are not. You mentioned Biff Farms. There's others as well that are leveraged on both, you know, I shouldn't even say both, leveraged on like on all the above, right? Equipment, Bitcoin, and this, as you said, so-called cheap money. Who do you view as a competitor that's, you know, done this right? You mentioned Marathon. Is there another one that you would look at the strategy and say, this was a good idea? This is a good way to handle a downswing in the price of Bitcoin?
So I think, you know, the first part, when we first launched Hive, there was many copycats that came out, and a lot of them were pump and dumps. Even Riot at the beginning was a pump and dump. And they basically got the SEC going after them, and they cleaned house there. And today it's a great management team. And I would say that a lot of the CEOs of these companies are members of YPO, Young Presidents Organization, and they're very professional. And so the CEO of Marathon, Jamie at Leverton at HUD 8, she's also a YPOer. So they have a high degree of respect for other people, for capital markets, and not in for a quick buck. And so I think the industry, the miners, have really matured. And they're very professional from their board representation and how they function. So that's preferred. The other companies that come along with other ideas in the crypto space, they haven't, especially all these lenders that came in that really have hurt. They hurt our industry. They hurt you and I. They hurt our reputations because of this downdraft, because we fall even more than Bitcoin. Like, a gold stock will fall more when gold falls, and vice versa. It will rise more when gold rises. Mm-hmm. But we've all been sort of spanked with this thing that's happening over in this metaverse over here. So I think that, you know, when you look at it, I think Iris has done an interesting job of just selling everything, but they're staying very focused and green and clean. I think Fred is a great guy, but the big bet of epic, big, big numbers in Texas is really difficult. It's every time we've gone to head to make a big thing, and it always comes back. It's just difficult. And so logistics of getting equipment, getting permitting, all those parts. So if you're nimble and you function like a bunch of Navy SEALs around, then you can actually get 10 megawatts here to go to 20 and 30 megawatts here to go to 40. And all of a sudden you, oh no, I'm going to build 500 megawatts. And I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to scale is the only way. It's just problematic. Mm-hmm. That's what I've seen. And you intimidate utility companies, and you intimidate, and like in the province, I think the Chinese start bombarding everyone, like in New Brunswick, you know, they got calls for 1.3 gigawatts of electricity. All right. And so, but when you go to build for that amount of electricity, they have a 30-year vision. It's a lot of cement. It's a lot of those turbines. It's not a quick, hey, we can do some crypto mining, make some money quick. They have to think of a city being built, a town being built. So it's a long-term perspective. And what happens is that you find as a crypto miner is that these communities all of a sudden become very afraid of crypto mining because you have all these guys, especially came a year ago with the Chinese, bombard them all. And we have to go back and say, no, that's not true. They're not sincere long-term players, because what we do in Sweden, we have a partnership with the utility company and they pay us as a standby because we can go from 30 megawatts to 3 in 15 seconds. So for them at peak energy periods in the morning and the evening, it's a lot cheaper to have us as the standby than building $200-300 million worth of turbines and equipment. Mm-hmm. So we can turn around and balance the grid. And that's what they've been trying to work on in Texas until these heat waves last longer. So I think that we've been able to demonstrate recycling of energy, partnering with the community, sponsoring education, sponsoring things. So we have that sort of complete sort of ESG type of, you know, good housekeeping strategy. But we think it's just smart to help educate the community and use the energy. And so I remain really bullish on that category. But other CEOs in the business, I think there's quite a few other, you know, good companies that are out there. I think CleanSpark are a bunch of engineers that know the technology well. They're opportunistic. I think, you know, they're great guys. Like, you want to go and be with them. You want to socialize with them because they're real professional people. And so I think the industry, the crypto mining industry, will do well when we come out of this trough.
So one thing I just want to make note of is having these data centers, multiple data centers spread out throughout the globe, it shields you from any local issues that may happen. So hypothetically, if one large data center in the state of Texas, and unfortunately they require power to be sent to the grid, you're SOL. But in your case, you're shielded from a lot of these problems. But we have one question here from the audience, and he asks, Bitcoin asks, are we going to see mining consolidation happen before this bear market ends? I want to know what your thoughts are on that particular question.
You know, I was asked that question. It's one of those great questions, because during the last meltdown, there was no M&A work. We're the only firm, I was told, that did two big acquisitions. We bought Lachute in Quebec, and we bought GPU1. One was public already. We bought their assets out of their company and gave them cash and stock. And then we bought the assets in New Brunswick. So will they go do a deal? Will they merge? There's been, you know, conversations. Investment bankers are trying to get people to talk to each other, etc. And I think it could happen. It could happen that someone needs, if you have a ability to find inexpensive electricity, people like Marathon want to partner with you. They may go to buy someone that has all of a sudden access to 100, 200 megawatts, because right now in Texas, I think they have 26,000 machines sitting idle. Mm-hmm.
26,000 machines idle right now? Is that a real number? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Fred's, as I said, he's a great guy. And I like his model. You know, he's a little slightly different than leasing everything, but he has focused, like we are, high revenue per employee. Riot's the opposite. Riot's bought all the workers, et cetera. So their revenue per employee is very, very different. And I prefer the high efficiency ratio. So we have 20 employees. We were doing 250 million, about over 20 million, sorry, 10 million, 12 million per employee. Now it's shrunk down, but we're still extremely, I think, on a relative basis, profitable compared to most industries.
Frank, you're a uniquely qualified to answer a question about Bitcoin ETFs. We've had a lot of mining CEOs, a few energy CEOs on the show over the last year and a half. The interviews have all been great. And we've asked them similar questions about the ETF because they have this exposure to, as you mentioned, the sort of virgin coins. You're the only guy who's brought an ETF to market that we've had on the program. And so I'm curious, you mentioned earlier that you thought AML was a big roadblock. Is there another roadblock or other roadblocks in your view? And as well, if you don't mind, how do you sort of grade Gary Gensler in his approach thus far on the spot ETF denials? And I'll give you a lens here, and our listeners and viewers know how we feel about this. At the same time that they've approved short ETFs and other, you know, G7 countries have approved spot ETFs, the United States seems very, very averse to it. What are your thoughts?
You know, I always find it's so fascinating to me because where does SHA-256 come from?
That's an American invention.
Yeah, NSA, yeah. Isn't it?
It's all American. No wonder the Chinese blew it out. And I try to tell people, I said, look at your phone. If you pick up your iPhone and you want to go check, they'll tell you the algorithm for facial recognition is the SHA-256.
Is that right? Really? The facial algorithm is SHA-256? I didn't know that.
You'll see it. It's in there. And it's it's really, you know, it's interesting. But I think the U.S. is just concerned that they can manage the adoption process coming on through the futures market. I think that that's what it is. The GATA people that are follow gold, they believe that the big banks manipulate the price of gold through the futures market. So if they wanted to, they can use the futures market to suppress the Bitcoin or whatever. So I think that's the sort of the boogeyman. But Gensler, I think he's done a first class job. He's been very cautious. But I think they really must win this Ripple case, and that it's a security, it's not proof of staking. It's proof of security or proof of scam, whatever you want. it sort of annoyed me when I started digging down more and having lunch with Michael Saylor in Miami and at his beautiful place and chatting about this sort of this debate that's occurring. But Ethereum, you know, the reason why many people went to Zug at the beginning for the foundations, do you know why? Because how they raise their money would have been a security.
Oh, that's right. Isn't there like a video of this or some audio recorded where Vitalik specifically talks about how they offshored some of the the original processes to avoid those laws?
Yeah, it's the crowdfunding in Switzerland allowed you to be able to do that, whereas in the U.S. you would easily be characterized. So Ripple is being attacked for raising money as a security. And so they have funded, I've been told, Greenpeace. So yes. All the FUD against Bitcoin and in our industry, Bitcoin mining, and Greenpeace say to change your code, change your Bitcoin code. All that stuff is being funded as a slideshow by the POS, in particular that Ripple community, because they make billions of dollars with Ripple. And so I think Gensler's right. He wants to, they should be able to regulate those exchanges. And I think regulate anything that's proof of stake. I was saying this the other day and I was speaking that if I give you a gold coin, I put it on the table, it doesn't earn any interest. Mm-hmm. I put a $100 bill on the table, it doesn't earn any interest. I put a wallet with a Bitcoin and it doesn't earn any interest. If you want interest on it, I have to put a wrapper around it that makes it into a security. So if you are telling me that you're going to pay me a yield on my staking, then you are creating a security. And therefore, you should be regulated by the OSC and the BC Securities Commission and the SEC. I'm a big believer of that. Whereas if you're mining and you're creating the digital asset that goes out into cyberspace, goes over, that's different. That's like mining gold and creating a gold brick or a silver brick.
In terms of that whole court case against Ripple, why are they focusing just on them? Because there's so many others too that could also just be substituted in for Ripple and they could call it security. Are they being made as an example? And once this is done, are they going to be going after the rest of the so-called securities, which is,
And will they go after, if you notice that Ginsler the other day said that he only gives the good housekeeping seal to Bitcoin. And I think that that's the reservation. I think it'll be hard now because Ethereum, as he's mentioned, is decentralized. But, you know, for your listeners, they can go and download and get the MIT. I believe the all the courses that were taught by Ginsler explaining this business. And I think he's done a great job. You know, it's hard being a cop on sort of new innovation that you understand the innovation. The other thing I was a little disappointed, I saw that regulations the other day said in the U.S. that anyone that had bought a Bitcoin or Ethereum couldn't be part of the policy making.
Yeah.
And I would think that you really should, this is my opinion, that you should have people that have tasted the food. Mm-hmm. It's like the CIA talk about this. You have explicit knowledge and tacit knowledge. So explicit knowledge is like getting your driver's license. But it doesn't mean you're a good driver. You need to know drive. You need tacit knowledge. So someone that has opened an account and understands the good and bad and all the process, in addition to reading everything about it, that person is a much better skilled person that has both the explicit and tacit knowledge. And I think that they make better policy makers.
So I'm going to poke you a little bit on your gold bug history. I know you may also be the only gold bug we've had on the show, Frank, to be honest with you. You mentioned the GATA guys think that the gold market is manipulated for futures. I don't know if it is or it isn't. It seems like it's more likely manipulated than not. I won't make you answer that question, given that there's probably some kind of Robert's rules you'd be violating by speaking about that publicly. But
No. It's what they I think what really validated, they did it for 20 years attacking, but the JP Morgan's traders Deutsche Bank. So they were spoofing gold. And we were always suspicious that it happened on Chinese holidays. So it's the first few days of October for celebrating communism or Mao's birthday. And so it would be on those sort of days that you would get a big drawdown. And so I think that we also had LIBOR, where they did be able to demonstrate during 2008 that a lot of traders, they got charged for manipulating the cost of capital, which really impacted banks and their borrowing and their counterparty risks, et cetera. So that's why they went after all those traders. And it, by default, they found about the gold end. So if they were spoofing, they were found guilty. Seems that JP Morgan came out of nowhere and wrote the big check to cover all of that up. But it is that whole case is what is really big with GATA that gave them credibility in the capital markets.
And do you think that it's possible that there's merit sort of in the commodities vein here? There's merit to this idea that the SEC is in a land grab battle with the CFTC for jurisdiction over Bitcoin. Is there any merit to that argument, you think?
No, I don't think so. I don't think. I think the SEC is very focused on people doing pump and dumps on shit coins, you know, like airdrop coming, you know, is it a drone or is it, Russian military dropping on you? Like, I think that that's, they have to clean that stuff up. You know, it's not fair because people will go for yield, especially when rates were zero. All of a sudden promising them 8%, 10%, 12%. So I think I'm a sophisticated and, you know, I'm being told I'm stupid, I'm dumb, and why don't I give them up my coins? Can you imagine if you're a retired person and you're living off that income and you're trying to, you want to roll your $50,000 over to make 12% because that's $500 a month to you, that's important extra lifestyle for you and boom, it's gone. That's where, if you want to do all that stuff in your own little world called your own metaverse, and you just play Monopoly Money with friends that play with, once you start coming over the chasm, once you start coming over and taking real money, retired people's assets and start doing this, no land. I think these guys all go to the Crowbar Hotel or get the Singaporean stick and keep out of them. But I'm
Really, that's the number of like one-liner sayings I picked up incredible. In the last 45 minutes. I gotta go back and write these down. We're going to the Crowbar Hotel. Yeah.
So I think, you know, Ginsler's doing a phenomenal. I really think it's tough, but he's doing, you know, a good job in trying to maintain the integration and maintain the adoption process of blockchain. And it's just difficult, I think, with these other characters.
I want to just now switch topics briefly to the coin that you mine, the Bitcoin and even the Ethereum. What do you end up doing with it? Do you keep it on are you self-storing it? Like, do you have your own wallet to keep it in, or is it
your own wallet, so it gets offline right away.
Okay. And is it like, I'm just curious, because I hear other ones, companies like Hut, for instance, they put it in a storage. And I forget who it is. Is it NYDIG or Gemini? I forget who it is.
They have a custody solution. Yeah.
Yes, and
yeah, we don't keep it live. It's segregated.
Gotcha. Okay. I've never heard anything that came out of Hive. So this is just more for curiosity's sake in my sense.
I better call some. So I hang up from now. I'm going to phone the CFO and make sure those coins are.
You could just examine the blockchain to see where it went. And it's easy to verify that it hasn't moved.
Make sure you tell them you're not trying to spend any time in the Crowbar Hotel, eh, Frank? Because you don't want to be stuck there. Len, I don't know. Len, do you have any last questions for our guest here?
Yeah, just one last question I have. Now, due to the fact that you have operations in Sweden, are you fearful at all that they're going to drop the hammer on any proof of work operations in Europe, specifically Sweden?
You know, it's always a concern. And what we did do is we distilled down the Bitcoin Mining Council. Michael Saylor did a great presentation, 30 minutes to 3 minutes. And then we had to translate it in French for everyone in Quebec. And we had to translate it into Swedish for all the Swedish authorities, etc. And we have it in Spanish and we have it in English. So you can get the 3-minute version of there's so much FUD out there against crypto mining and trying to understand actually electricity. And that's what we're doing. And we're involved with lobbying groups. We have a lobbyist in the US. We have a lobby in Canada. We do not have a lobbyist in Sweden, but we have a phenomenal president that's from Sweden, and she came to America on a D1 basketball scholarship.
Hey,
who's academically all American and earned her MBA from the University of Chicago, and she worked at Fidelity, so she's so feminine, but you give her a basketball and she'll headbutt you. So she's very competitive. And so she's the president of the Swedish operations. And it's really important to have someone that is from that community, someone that speaks that language, rather than just being a foreigner coming in. And it makes it that we're more serious about a long-term commitment in that community.
Absolutely. Frank, you've been an outstanding guest. Before you go, we have one question we ask all our guests to stir up a little bit of shit in your personal life, sir. Let's say you're in the parking lot of, I don't know, a Fortino's or something for Southern Ontarians or whatever other grocery store you like going to, and you're in your favorite pair of shorts, okay? Nothing too short, okay? I'm all about the guy thigh personally, but I don't want to say anything crazy here for this question. Favorite pair of running shoes, muscle shirt, whatever you want. Next to you is Michael Saylor. Okay. He's also wearing his favorite pair of running shoes, shorts, muscle shirt, whatever else. And 40 yards away, straight line, no obstacles, checkered flag. Can you beat Mike Saylor in a 40 yard foot race, or can you not beat him?
Me beat Michael Saylor?
Yeah.
And he's much younger than me.
Listen, I'm not talking about age. If you want to talk about 15 years ago, Frank Holmes, talk about 15 years ago, Frank Holmes. Can peak Frank?
Hell yeah, Mike.
He's ready to go.
So Mike is a little younger than you. You're saying you can rip him up, eh?
From Cabbage Town when I was a kid, I can still. I run every day. You know, I run 5 kilometers every day, and I ran the Austin Half Marathon. Now, I'm slow, but when it comes to a sprint like that, then I'll just get up there, throw the ball to me.
Great answer. Frank, tell people where they can find out more about you, Hive, anything you want to talk about. If you got like a YouTube channel under an anonymous pseudonym that you bake cookies on, tell them that too.
I'm so buck naked and transparent with this stuff because I'm so regulated. So I have to be so cautious. And so usfunds.com covers everything. That's the company Grow, G-R-O-W, and it has the big investment in Hive. I forgot the other part. We talked earlier about debt. So it has still about $10 or $11 million left of a convertible. But remember, it's fixed. And when we did this thing, it was the inflationary rate. So there was no cost to it. It was a unique piece of paper that Hive has and that we have. And they're just paying it down, which is fine with us. But I think that usfunds.com, Frank Talk, I have there. I think investors learn about 100,000 readers in 80 countries. We publish every Friday. It's run myself and my investment team. And we talk about the world of gold, the world of crypto, and what my travels around the world. That makes it easy. And we have Hive. So anything we do with Hive, we will tell on usfunds.com. But or go to Hive. Hive's what YouTube is just rich with content. What Metcalfe's Law is, all within 2 minutes. The FUD that's out there on crypto mining, so you can understand. 3 minutes. Most of the educational content that we have is 2 minutes.
I love it. Frank Holmes, CEO, co-founder, Hive Blockchain. Thank you for your time, sir. We appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend, and have a wonderful summer.
You as well, sir. You as well. Take care, everyone.
Take care.
Way to go, Frank.